And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sidney Wildsmith.
If you asked almost anyone around the world today whether Al Gore was right about global warming, they'd almost all have to admit we're in the middle of a scorcher. Record-setting heat is reaching dangerous levels, and the planet's animals have to cope with it too. Today, we find out how, and what you need to know to keep your pets safe. It's all coming up, and more, when your voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
The sights and sounds of planet Earth this week, the morbid face of war, the torn and shredded towns, the pounding, launching tanks, the sirens, red blare, the bombs bursting in air. You'd think, or at least hope, that by now humanity would put an end to war. No matter what the cause or provocation or balance of threat, to see the tangle of destruction, and we only witness the censored versions, I have to wonder as I see the suffering and the madness, and watch the expensive tanks launch expensive missiles which take down expensive bridges, and Congress people debate if we can afford to pay for the evacuation of Americans, is war perhaps getting just too expensive? Can humanity really afford much more of this? It's difficult for me, because like most of you, I sense the wonder of life on Earth. And we're squandering the gift, and in the process, missing the message. What the world needs now is peace. I encourage all of you to take the time today and tomorrow to ask for a restoration of peace on this Earth. Because we have enough troubles of our own as humans, just trying to survive the heat, which is gripping the nation and the world. People are suffering in our cities and towns from a sweltering heat wave that is setting records. And it's not just here. Europe is bracing for the same. And it makes me wonder, so how do the wild creatures deal with this? And that's what we explore today as we talk with two experts from the Humane Society of the United States who tell us what we need to know about keeping our pets safe and how do our urban wildlife neighbors manage to survive in such heat. There's a mix of great information and interesting stories from people who deal with this day in and day out. Now, following the news, we head on up to Santa Monica, where we help to celebrate the launch of an amazing electric car, the Tesla Motor Company Roadster. And if you've ever had a discussion about whether or not electric cars are doable, well, hold on to your handrails, because this story has wheels. It's a great show coming up, and so we get things fired up following the news. And so now, the news. Planet Earth is setting some new records. NASA reports that the first half of 2006 was one of the warmest on record, with an average temperature 3.4 degrees above the 20th century average, and the 12 months from July 2005 to the present were ranked as the warmest such period of the century. And this news is not going unnoticed, as the nation is sweltering under a heat wave that is causing brownouts and blackouts, and some predict that the summer is just heating up, so to speak. Europe, too, is staggering, as tropical heat is kindling reminders of the 2003 heat wave that claimed 30,000 deaths, half of which were in France. In a related story, the U.S. is expecting landfall of the second tropical storm of the season. Beryl is gaining speed and heading up the eastern seaboard. Record high temperatures are raising the specter that 2006 may be a second record-setting hurricane season. A 7.1 Richter quake off the coast of Indonesia sent a 6-foot wall of water crashing into the fishing villages and resorts of Indonesia's Java Island, killing 368 people and leaving 200 missing. The tsunami has forced the evacuation of 54,000 people. There was no warning before the waves hit the coastal areas on Monday, this despite the efforts to set up a warming system after the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami, which left 230,000 dead or missing. Fortunately, many people who witnessed the ocean's unusual receding ran for cover this time, figuring that a tsunami was inevitable. "Please don't feed the alligators" has become "if you feed, you'll have to plead guilty or not guilty, that is, to a second-degree misdemeanor. Alligators in Florida are becoming accustomed to being fed by residents and tourists, and is feeding speculation that such is leading to an increased number of attacks by the alligators, who can become aggressive if they don't get the treats they expect. Unfortunately, the alligators are the ones which pay the ultimate price, as they must be put down to protect the human benefactors. In order to stem the increasing need to take aggressive animals down, Florida Fish and Wildlife agents are launching sting operations to identify and cite people who persist in this unfortunate behavior. In 2004, more than 7,000 alligators had to be killed after becoming just too friendly with humans. As the war in the Middle East rages, the lions and tigers at the Haifa Zoo are being transferred to bomb-proof cages to prevent their being set free due to bombs which are now hitting the city regularly and could explode in an open cage and liberate the wild creatures into the war zone. And until now, scientists weren't really sure how long whales actually live, but recent studies by scientists at Scripps Institution of Oceanography proves that many of the bowhead whales have been living free in the oceans for 160, 180, and even 200 years. It's a great bit of detective work that has led to these conclusions, and we'll be looking into this story in depth in the weeks ahead. And that's the news. Now, before we take a spin in the Tesla Roadster, I encourage you to call your kids and family and tell them to listen to segments 2 and 3 to learn some important points about how to keep your pets safe during this unbelievable heat wave. That's all coming up. But first, one of the things that intrigues me is the fact that it seems as if when life was somehow manifest, that there was crafted into its structure a wisdom gene, a gene for wisdom. And what that means is that when humans are confronted with something that really challenges their survival, that wisdom gene kicks in. That's why we're still here.
That's an optimistic view of the world, isn't it?
It's true. Well, I absolutely believe in this. I'm amazed that we have within us the capacity to see solutions that otherwise we couldn't even imagine,
uh-huh.
or that haven't been done yet.
Uh-huh.
And it's part of this wisdom gene. Well, one of the things that's happening, that's the positive from the threat of global warming, is the fact that the wisdom gene is being activated dramatically. The result of that is that phenomenal numbers of terrific ideas are emerging on the planet here, which is exactly what we need right now, which is what the wisdom gene creates. And joining us now from the Bay Area up in California is the CEO of the Tesla Motor Company, Martin Eberhard. Martin, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Well, Martin, you've actually come up with something pretty extraordinary. I'm not going to say revolutionary, but it is in a sense revolutionary. It's a technology, it's a car, mm-hmm. it's electric, but it goes way beyond that. Give us an idea of what you're unveiling to the world.
So what we're unveiling is a new electric car, from a performance perspective, it looks very different than other cars. It's a beautiful and quick sports car, 0 to 60 around 4 seconds, driving range of about 250 miles on the EPA highway driving cycle. But what's really different about it is the attitude we had toward the design of this car, in that we weren't starting off trying to build a car that's for everybody. Instead, we're building a car that's designed for enthusiasts and for drivers, and building a company starting at that point.
Well, that's kind of interesting. Some people may criticize that and say, oh, well, you're appealing to sort of an elitist green people. But, you know, the interesting thing is the fact that almost all the technologies that we now use commonly were started out, had to start out really in high performance or high application modes and space technologies and things. So I'm guessing that part of your corporate strategy was to start out there. Are we heading in the right direction?
Well, I think your comment is exactly right. I mean, there have been dozens of electric car companies over the last 30 or 40 years that that have started off with their first car trying to make the first model that will be the car that everybody can drive. And it's just not practical to break into any new market starting at the low end. And cars is no exception. You know, if we were to try to make a car that competed with a Honda Civic, there's no way that we could reach the price point even if our drivetrain was free, because we don't have the kind of purchasing efficiencies that Honda has. So the idea is to compete on performance rather than cost.
Good way to start out, because then you can always modify to as you scale up to meet needs of the average driver. But let's talk about your car, because I like to drive, and I've had a variety of sports cars. I've never had a high-performance machine, but one of the little stats that I think a lot of people are going to be thrilled about is the fact that your claim is that this car will accelerate from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. Are we right about that so far?
Yep, that's right.
Well, that puts it in a league, a pretty elite league, with names like Ferrari and Lamborghini and Lotus. That's exciting stuff. You literally have a high-performance car.
Yeah, that's right. We're high performance in acceleration. I think that if you look at the truly high-end cars like Ferraris and Porsches, I don't want to claim that we're Porsches yet. The top speed of such cars is, you know, 150, 160, 170, even 200 miles an hour. Top speed of the Tesla car is above 130 miles an hour, so it's certainly enough to get you around on the highways, enough to win a few little races on the road. But we aren't a high-speed car yet.
I had the great pleasure of going up to L.A. a number of years back, and I forget, unfortunately, the name of the car company that was started by one of the Lee Iacocca's friends. I think it was the E-Car Company. Does that ring a bell?
Doesn't ring a bell, no.
Okay. Anyways, and they were working on electric vehicles, and so I took a test ride, some of their vehicles. This is a whole different experience in terms of drive. Explain to the listeners what it's like when you... Now, you don't call it a gas pedal. What do you call it?
Let's call it an accelerator.
That makes sense. Is it on the floor like a normal accelerator?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes
there's
sense, too.
There's two pedals. There's a gas pedal and a brake.
Very good.
Let's call it an accelerator and a brake.
There you go. Well, talk about what happens when you press on that thing, because it's a whole different experience than any other gas-powered, you know, car that I've ever driven.
Well, that's right. The difference in experience is more than just the numbers. It's, you know, we can do 0 to 60 in about 4 seconds. But if you compare that to a gasoline-powered car that can do 0 to 60 in, let's say, 4.5 seconds, it's quite a different experience. The difference is this. If you hopped in a fancy Porsche or a Ferrari and wanted to do the maximum acceleration, what you'd have to do is first put the clutch in, second, push the gas pedal down until you redline the engine, and then next, take your foot off the clutch slowly and slip the clutch at just the right rate to get the maximum acceleration. This would cause a fair amount of stress on the clutch, and if you got it just right, you'll get a perfect launch.
Good point.
Right. And then somewhere around 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, you need to switch into second gear. So once again, you need to do a very, very quick shift to get that ideal speed and get your 0 to 60 time as advertised. If you did that to somebody else's car, you're going to be thrashing the clutch, and they're going to ask you to stop driving. An electric car is quite different. An electric car, you just step on the pedal.
Well, that's what's funny about this, because in order to achieve those acceleration rates, you have to be an expert driver.
That's right.
In the other form, whereas this one, it's like you hit the accelerator, and it's all go.
Right. At any speed, if you're driving along at 30 miles an hour and you suddenly want to accelerate quickly, you just step on it. There isn't any downshifting. There isn't any waiting for your engine to spin up, the turbocharger to kick in or whatever. The power is immediately at your toe whenever you want it.
Well, also, the car sets a new standard in the sense that you've really addressed the main problem with almost all other electric cars, and that is the range of this vehicle.
That's right.
With this performance, you've also been able to achieve quite a record in terms of the range for a production vehicle.
Right, and there's two reasons for that. First, we're using a much more modern battery technology than previous electric cars have used. We're using a lithium-ion chemistry battery technology, and there's a fair amount of our own development to make that even possible in the car. So technology is a piece of it. The other piece is, of course, embedded in our decision to make a high-performance car and not a low-price car. We can afford to put a more expensive battery pack in a car than would be possible in a low-price commuter car.
Are we going to see the Tesla motor car at drag strips and things?
I don't think we're going to be drag racing them, but they'll be on the track, I'm sure, someplace along the way.
Yeah,
our goal right now is to build a street car, a decent, high-performing street car, and I think that's partly just a cost issue for the company.
The car is a beautiful car. Some people liken it to the Lotus Elise, which is elegant. You've really pulled out all the stops in terms of going for a beautifully designed car as well.
Yeah, this is actually a quite a different car than cars like the Lotus Elise and others. This is probably the only car you can buy for under $200,000 that has a carbon fiber body. The Lotus, for example, is fiberglass like a Corvette. It is styled for us by a world-class automotive stylist, and it is, everything we could do to make it a truly beautiful car that is really a sports car.
Now, this is a two-seater.
It's a two-seater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a roadster that has an optional hardtop, has a soft top for rainy days if you don't have the hardtop with you.
And I imagine the interior is nicely appointed as well.
Yes, that's right. It's a fairly small car, so there's not a lot of room for goodies, but it has navigation system and a computer that tracks the battery usage and heated seats and air conditioning and all the stuff you'd expect in a nice car.
So let's talk about how a person actually refuels this car. How simple is that? What's the process?
It refuels more or less the same way that your cell phone refuels. You come home and you plug it in. In the morning, you unplug it, drive off. So it's just a plug that hangs on a hook in your garage. You unhook it and plug it into a socket that's right next to the driver's door.
Now, how long does it take for a full recharge?
How long does your cell phone take to recharge?
Well, about 3-4 hours, I think.
But do you really know? You think, right?
Yeah, right.
Because you don't care. As long as the charge of your cell phone is long enough to last you through the day, just as long as it charges overnight, who cares?
Right, exactly.
Right. And so with a 250-mile driving range, outside of road trips, that is enough to make it through your day. With that in mind, it's about 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, see, that's really, really extremely reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, it is not reasonable, and I'll be the first to admit it, for a road trip to Chicago. If you want to hop in your car in San Diego and drive to Chicago and stop along the way and charge, it's going to be, 200 to 250 miles per day, or at least broken up by 3-hour charging intervals.
Well, let's put it this way. It isn't the perfect car for a quick drive to Chicago. 200 to 250 miles a day is a really wonderful way to go, too. I've done that. I actually have crossed the country saying I'm going 200 miles a day, and that was fun. Of course, I had a lot of time on my hands at the time.
Yeah, for me, I'm one of these guys that's driven from Chicago to San Luis Obispo, for example, in 41 hours.
Right.
But, for all of your around-town driving, I live here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and for me, I have about a 15-mile commute to work. It would be perfectly reasonable for me to come to work and then drive up to San Francisco, for example, to meet friends for dinner, drive across to Berkeley and watch the sunset, drive down to San Jose and come home the long way. And that entire trip is not even close to reaching the range of the car.
Well, now let's get down to some other nuts and bolts here. So what's it going to cost? What does that actually cost in terms? I'm sure you've done the numbers. Well, what's it cost to refuel your car?
Okay, I'm going to give you two numbers. The first is if I just were to charge it up at my house at the standard PG&E rates, then it's about $6.50 to give me a 250-mile driving range.
That's still a bargain.
So it's about 2.2 cents a mile, something like that. However, most of the power companies, for example, again here in the Bay Area, PG&E has an incentive rate for electric cars that takes advantage of what they call time of use charging.
Hmm.
Basically, if you charge at night when the electricity is cheaper for them, they pass it on to you. And at the incentive rate, it winds up being about a penny a mile. It's really cheap.
Well, that is really cheap.
Yeah.
Particularly
but let's be real. If somebody's going to buy a fancy and expensive sports car, isn't really trying to save money on fuel. By the time you spent, $85,000 to $100,000 on a car, whether you save a few bucks on gas isn't the issue. The issue is much more that you're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're not using oil. You're not contributing to global warming in the way that you would with a gasoline car.
What I like about it is the fact that you've demonstrated that as we look into the future, because this is the beginning for you, and I believe you actually have an intention at some point down the road here to create those cars that consumers can use. What they can look forward to in the future is the fact that they can get these kinds of rates on cars that they would be able to afford.
That's right. Yes. And we're a small company, and we actually can't come out with a lot of models all at once. It's one at a time. But we will come out with future models of cars that will be less expensive and probably seat more people.
How long are we going to have to wait before we are all riding around in Tesla motor vehicles?
As quickly as I can get there.
Well, let me know. I'd be happy to help you out with that. That's just an exciting vision. Because I like the way you're approaching this, which is to say, let's go with something that people really want. I certainly appreciate the design. One of the things that I find interesting is the fact that you've gotten this car to production in 3 years. I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, I'm not quite to production. I'll be in production in another, three quarters of a year or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, 3 3/4 of a year. I mean, you started this company about 3 years ago, is that?
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's including raising money and building a team and assembling the car and so on. This year is spent largely in safety testing and durability testing, which is a big program. I mean, for me as a Silicon Valley kind of guy, it's been a real eye-opener as to just how long the design cycle is for a car compared to other kinds of products, largely because of the testing that have to go into a car.
Well, that is a big part of it. It costs a lot of money to have these cars certified for public use.
Yeah, well, certified isn't quite the right word, but tested is, yeah.
Okay, whatever that is, you have to have a right to drive this thing on the road. You have to have it safety tested.
Yeah, and a little bit of news. Late last week, we did our first full vehicle head-on collision test.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh.
No, I mean...
Well, it's a shame for the car.
I know.
This is a very expensive shop-built prototype of the production car, but the good news is it survived.
Wonderful.
And it was actually... our engineers, of course, are tearing it apart now, but everything looked really good. So it's nice to see when the car performs as the computer models predict.
Well, now, for people who want to learn more about the Tesla Motor Company, help them out.
If you want to know more about Tesla Motors, come to our website. It's www.teslamotors.com. There'll be lots and lots of details of the car for you to see there.
Another aspect of this is the fact that you've had some interesting players who helped finance this. One of the things I'm curious about is to what degree are they in this? Obviously, everyone wants to make a profit, and they certainly have that as their motive. But as well, from this level of player, are you seeing a similar type of commitment to green and sustainable and clean tech?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anybody who's an investor would say that investing in a new car company is not maybe the safest way to make lots of money. When we founded this company, and it was just me and a couple of other guys trying to start a car company, we looked around for somebody to invest, and the person we found was Elon Musk, who is the CEO of a company called SpaceX, making rocket ships. And he saw what we're doing, and I believe that if he wasn't busy making rocket ships, he would be making electric cars. He's that much of a believer. And he would be doing it, again, not because he thinks it's the quickest way to make money, but because he deeply believes that we need to do something about our oil consumption. For both geopolitical and environmental reasons. And he's been not only a strong investor, having invested nearly $30 million of his own personal money in the company, he's been involved with the company along the way very, very strongly in terms of making sure we made a car that was beautiful and the right kind of design to the feature sets that were right, to encouraging us actually to spend more money on getting it right than I, as a startup guy, would like to spend.
Now, of course, a lot of people are talking about the hybrid car as the car of the future, you're going strictly electric.
Mm-hmm.
What's the trade-off there? What do you see? Do you expect at some point electric cars to be the dominant car?
Absolutely. I mean, hybrid cars are a good intermediate solution for some portions of the automotive segment, but hybrid cars in the end burn gasoline, and if you want to get off of gasoline, you can't be using it in your car. And electric cars are just fundamentally more efficient than any gasoline car will be, hybrid or otherwise. The difficulty with electric cars for now is getting an affordable battery pack to get you the kind of range that you want to drive your car.
These things will all be resolved in the future. There's every reason to know that they will.
Oh, yes.
It's the technology is advancing tremendously fast. Well, Martin Eberhard, CEO of the Tesla Motor Company, you've got a great car here, and I'm going to take a ride in this thing sooner or later.
Oh, yes.
And I want to congratulate you on your unveiling and wish you unlimited success in the future. Thanks for lending your voice here.
Oh, thanks very much. Yep, take care.
We now switch from news about a hot car to news you need to know about how to keep your pets safe as the temperatures continue to heat up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.